I'm Dr. Michael Broder, and I'm a psychologist who has helped many, many people over the last two decades to pick up the pieces and to rebuild their lives after a love relationship has ended. In addition, I went through my own divorce way back in 1972, long before the divorce rate began to hover at around 50%. This tape program will tell you all about the process of ending and letting go of a love relationship and how to go through your process as quickly as possible. So first, I'd like you to think of getting over an ended love relationship as a skill that practically everyone may well use at least once. That 50% divorce rate when it first appeared back in the late 70s was thought to be merely a blip on the computer screen or something that was a product of the me generation that would correct itself and be remembered as simply a fluke. However, we know now that that's not the case. While some studies have produced slightly lower rates, others have shown the divorce rate to be even higher than 50%. In fact, I haven't heard of a credible study that hasn't put it within 10% either side of that 50% figure. This means that on an average, half of those who marry will have their marriages end in divorce. Now add to that, the ended relationships, live-in or otherwise, where partners were not married, and people who become widowed, and it's apparent that ending a love relationship is something that's almost as common as love relationships themselves. Sometime during the 1970s, it became a mainstream option to end a marriage that for whatever reason had run its course or was not working. Many people began to refer to divorce rates as something that had reached epidemic proportions. But since the term epidemic is generally used in reference to disease, I would ask whether it's a worse condition to find yourself leaving a situation that brings you more unhappiness than pleasure, or staying in a relationship that leads to real unfulfillment. Until recently, getting out of a marriage normally required that there be one partner who was at fault and another who was the innocent party or the victim. But with the acceptance of no-fault divorce, which in some form exists just about everywhere, the law has progressed an awful lot more than some of our attitudes. It's important that you listen to this entire program. Some of the things that you will hear on this program will really hit home, while some of the things may not apply to you at all. Some parts you will want to listen to over and over again, or you may wish to note certain items that you want to refer to quite often. Many of you will find this program to be an important source of support that's always there at your disposal. Toward the end of the program, you'll find some exercises that will help to put to work for you much of what is said throughout the program. Feel free to stop the tape anytime you need a moment to reflect on what was said and how it applies to you. This tape is for you if you've been convinced that for one reason or another your present relationship must end, that it has run its course, and that saving it does not appear to be a good option. This tape is also for you if your relationship has ended not by your choice, but as a result of the decision of your partner, or if you're trying to empathize with or help someone else who's ending a love relationship, or trying to help that person to move on with his or her life. If you're trying to gain some insight into what you may have gone through at some other point in your life when your relationship has ended, or if you're in a relationship you wish you could leave, but somehow perceive that as being way too hard, or if you have feared going it alone so much that you resign yourself to practically anything in order to avoid another bout with the single life, and if that fearful attitude of yours is something you'd like to change. In the latter case, if you would like to leave but don't feel confident that you can pull it off, it may be that you're hanging in there merely because of an almost phobic-like fear of being single. Since my book, The Art of Living Single, came out, I've spoken to many audiences of singles, and I've become thoroughly convinced that if there could ever be a widespread cure for the phobia of being single, the divorce rate would skyrocket even more. I can't even predict how high. No trend can continue indefinitely, and this one will probably start swinging back to staying mated as soon as we teach ourselves to choose our partners more consciously and sensibly. Then all it'll take to make staying together the norm once again, and to really slash our divorce rates, will be to pay more attention to our relationship issues, as well as to make more of a mutual commitment to work them out with our partners. Becoming involved in a love relationship, marriage or otherwise, has traditionally been a function of the heart. However, getting out is much more a function of understanding what it takes to change and control our attitudes and emotions. In other words, we can't always choose who it is that we'll develop passionate feelings for, but we can certainly work to dissipate our passionate feelings when having them towards someone is not in our own best interest. Yes, some couples are able to see that their relationship is no longer serving them and agree to get out with style and dignity. That is, to make their breakup a civilized transition. This is most possible when either you have no children, or if you and your mate clearly agree as to what role each parent will play regarding custody and visitation. You and your partner have come to a mutual decision, and no one is seen as the leaver or leavee, the winner or loser, in quotes, of course. There is no third party who's jealous of whatever association you maintain with the partner you're leaving, especially when you have children and contact with your ex-partner is therefore necessary, or you've been able to intelligently discuss these issues, which may have triggered the negative emotions that made you choose the option of breaking up in the first place. When there's little passion left between you and your partner, or at least one of you is not much more emotionally involved in the ended love relationship than the other partner is. If you and your partner meet these conditions, you can achieve a transition that will minimize the pain for everyone involved. Parting easily is especially ideal if you have children. Many couples enter therapy together in order to bring this about, not only for their own sake, but also for the sake of their children. But now, let's talk about some of the more common scenarios. First, when you're the one who decides to leave, and then when you're not. First, let's assume that you're the one who's initiating the breakup. In this case, you can be in just as much pain as your partner, who may feel as and be seen by others as a victim. In addition, you can be feeling an extraordinary amount of guilt toward your partner, your children, and others who are displeased by your decision. Many who initiate the breakup find themselves tormented by the tendency to second-guess themselves, even if they have put as much consideration into this crucial decision as it deserves. During lonely times, or when you see your partner in another light, it's easy to wonder whether you've made a mistake. If this is the case, you may find it helpful to write out a list of the reasons that brought you to your decision to leave and to refer to that list often, but especially at those times when you find yourself second-guessing. This simple exercise has saved many couples from thoughtless reconciliations that not only didn't last, but that tended to intensify and prolong both partners' pain. Sometimes, after leaving your partner, you feel good at first. You feel a burst of freedom from that relationship and assume that all the issues have been addressed. Then you may experience a delayed reaction after a month or two, 6 months, a year, even 5 years, and you begin to have some very unanticipated reactions that may feel as though you just left. If this is the case, even if you're the one who made the choice, we'll talk more a bit later about how to handle some of your unexpected feelings. But when it's your choice to leave, telling your partner that it's over may be quite difficult as well. Some find that the crutch that helps them the most through this painful task is their own anger and rage, which can temporarily blind you to the feelings of guilt and confusion. Yes, this is a time when anger, rage, and even hate can feel like it's coming in quite handy. Someone recently pondered to me, why can't my ex just be a barracuda? It's usually quite difficult to tell your partner that you want to break up in a calm and rational manner, but if you can pull that off without anger and blame, you'll probably be a lot more convincing. I've asked several people whose partners had told them that their relationship was over, what statement most convinced you that your partner was to be taken seriously? Here are some of the rational and not-so-rational replies. We no longer have enough between us to warrant the continuing of our relationship. Or, we've tried everything and can't seem to change ourselves together, and I'm not willing to go on trying and failing any longer. I'm not going to believe again that you'll stop drinking. I want to leave, and in fact, I want to leave even if you do stop drinking. How about this one? I'd rather die than spend another day with you. I want out now. I love you as a friend, but I have no more desire for you in any other way. I'm seeing someone else, and we've agreed that as soon as I divorce you, we will marry, so it's over. I wish I could trade places with you and be the one who feels the pain, but I don't see how we can continue. As you can see, some people, but certainly not all who initiate the breakup, do care deeply for their partners on some level. Many even initiate this process in the therapist's office to ensure that their partners will have some support to see them through the breakup. Now, let's talk about what happens when it's your partner who has initiated the breakup. Much of your pain here can result from your feelings of helplessness and inadequacy that your partner's message triggers. This might even occur if you've been thinking about initiating the breakup yourself, or if you fully agree with your partner that the relationship is no longer working and won't be in the future. Just as your partner, the initiator of the breakup, has his or her feelings of guilt and confusion to contend with, you might be feeling rejected and undesirable too. Conversely, you might even have feelings of renewed desire for your partner who's no longer available. As strong as these feelings may get, they could be the expression of your panic or addiction, either to your partner or to the lifestyle you had together. Watch for a tendency to begin bargaining to get your partner back. In doing that, you may write off other more workable options that will help you to put your life back together. But once you've left no stone unturned in exploring the possibility of making things work, the feeling that you can regain your partner and have a great life together is normally an illusion. Think about it. The chances are it's not your former partner you want back, but some idealized version of him or her. After all, it's your partner as he or she really is who has initiated this breakup. So let's talk about helping you to free yourself, since in this case, your only other option is perhaps to be saddled with what could be excruciating pain about your being helpless to change your partner's mind. When letting go of an ended relationship, regardless of the circumstances, you can expect that there will be some emotional crisis. It doesn't matter who initiates the breakup. Many of the issues you will face are actually identical. So here are some things to keep in mind about your process of letting go of your ended love relationship, all of which will become clearer to you as you progress through this program. It's your responsibility to break emotionally from your partner and not your partner's responsibility to free you. If you feel like you've lost your identity, realize that perhaps you've deposited too much of it into the relationship in the first place. Remember your ex as he or she really was, not the idealized version of the person whom you imagine has the power to make all things better for you now. Feelings of desperately needing your ex-partner do not indicate love. They often merely indicate longing and need. Don't confuse these with love. You really can live without him or her. Trust yourself, and you'll probably live even better. Even if there's a lot of love between the two of you and a lot of passion, keep in mind that these things are not enough to maintain a good relationship. It's the ability to work out issues together that's perhaps the most important element. And if that was missing, your breakup at some point was almost inevitable. Just as there are certain things about yourself that you probably won't or can't change, there's virtually nothing about your partner that you can change without he or she really wanting to make that change. Without that, your relationship probably couldn't have been worked out under any circumstances. Your feelings of sadness, anger, and pain are temporary. If you can remember that, they'll pass. Believing that you'll never feel any better can be the most painful and most difficult emotional element of your breakup. Now, you will get past this mourning process and be able to let go and be emotionally free if only you believe you can. Since 1974, when I began writing about this subject, there have been many theories written about the stages of divorce and separation. I've seen a 5-stage theory, an 8-stage theory, a 7-stage theory, and at least 2 6-stage theories. Fortunately, at some point I stopped counting because letting go really boils down to two very major stages. You're becoming emotionally free of the relationship you've ended so that it no longer preoccupies you. This includes putting your emotions into perspective, handling the practical issues of this transition, and seeing yourself, perhaps for the first time in decades, as someone who's not part of a couple, but as an independent entity with a world full of options. And then rebuilding your life. That's stage two. Once you've let go of the past, you're then able to freely choose what you now want your life to be. It's important that you not make these new choices as a reaction to your ended relationship, nor make them to merely quell the pain you feel. You now have the wisdom and experience on your side, and you can truly become the designer, the architect, of a blueprint for your new life. What's more, you have the rest of your life to enjoy whatever it is you design for yourself. From here on in, the main limits to your happiness are the ones you choose to yield to. But as you can see, it's very difficult to go to that second stage and rebuild your life before you have, in fact, let go of your old life. Many people try to sidestep letting go, and they wind up in rebound relationships or in other conditions that amount to jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Of course, some people seem quite capable of leaving a relationship with little in the way of issues to work on. But chances are, the relationship that such people are leaving was emotionally dead a long time before the official ending took place. There are basically two kinds of issues that people face when ending love relationships. The first kind are practical issues. Examples here include finances, learning and replacing certain skills and tasks that your former partner provided, child-rearing and visitation issues, legal issues, finding a new place to live, leaving your home, and possibly beginning some new career options that may be necessary as a result of your new lifestyle. The second stage are the emotional issues. These include your feelings about the breakup, divorce, or separation. They include loneliness, anger, depression, jealousy, anxiety, longing, grief, fear of the future, guilt, perhaps related to your ex-partner, children, or other family members, resisting strong urges to contact your former partner, and dealing with the general stresses of transition and change. In addition, there are some things that come under both categories, such as handling your family, friends, and in-laws with respect to their issues and problems about your breakup. This is a period in your life when it's often most crucial to get support from those around you. Family and friends may be able to provide this to a limited degree. Many people find that support groups designed for those in transition can be extremely helpful. Also, support from professionals, such as an attorney, who can assess your situation and see to it that you're legally protected from things that you may not even be anticipating, or support from a psychotherapist who has expertise in short-term therapy that is goal-directed. The best form of therapy in this case is a cognitive behavioral approach, such as rational emotive behavior therapy, which will help you to primarily focus on your present situations and your feelings about it. Some therapists who first meet you as a new client during this period of your life make the mistake of diagnosing the depression or anxiety you could glaringly have as something that afflicts you independently of your present situation. And thus, they may arrive at the conclusion that long-term therapy is the treatment of choice. Be wary of this when choosing a therapist. Just as you would with an attorney, a physician, or any other professional, don't ever be afraid to seek a second opinion if you experience discomfort with the therapist that you've selected or with his or her therapeutic orientation. A little later on, I'll have more to say about getting support to help you through your transition, since it's this support that can be a crucial element in providing you with the impetus you need to break free. Since they're both practical and emotional issues in ending a love relationship, and since they often come up together, the mix can seem quite overwhelming. Practical issues, though rarely easy to resolve, would often seem a lot simpler if only they were not complicated by the emotions that can help you to cast doubt upon the decisions you make. The reason that I refer to practical issues as simple is because of an observation I've made over many years of conducting divorce and separation groups. I'm always struck by how efficiently one group member can advise another group member on how to handle his or her practical issues, and yet these same people have so much difficulty focusing as astutely on their own problems. Obviously, this is because when advising someone else, they and not you are emotionally invested. By getting a handle on your emotional issues, you'll find that the practical ones will generally fall into place. But the first step is to sort them out. For example, if it's necessary for you to move your place of residence, a practical solution would be for you to look into the types of houses or apartments you can afford, choose one and set a date for moving, and then call a mover. However, if you're constantly putting this task off, even after you've determined that it must be done soon, you're probably doing so out of the emotional issue of anger or depression about the fact that you have to move. And remember, these emotions are what can most lower your level of motivation. This can apply to financial matters, job hunting, or any step that needs to be taken as part of the transition brought on by your breakup. So let's get right to the emotional issues that may be standing in your way. The good news is, of course, that these emotions you're feeling are only temporary. But even if you recognize that, they sure may not feel that way. One of the most difficult things to do is to convince someone who's depressed over something as clear-cut as ending a love relationship that the emotions they are feeling will change. The fact is, no mood is permanent. This is the essence of emotions. The happy emotions such as joy as well as the negative ones. They're all transient in nature. And that goes for self-pity, guilt, bitterness, feelings of loneliness, inadequacy, anger, mistrust, grief, desperation, and hopelessness. When negative feelings do linger, it's usually because of our self-defeating attitudes or irrational beliefs that keep them in place. To the extent that you have these irrational beliefs, it's to your benefit to look at what you may be telling yourself about the breakup, your former lifestyle, your partner, yourself, your children, and other situations or people in your life who may have in some way been affected. This is usually an important part of the mix that's perpetuating the negative emotions that you feel. To the extent that you can adopt an alternative attitude, which is in essence a positive affirmation or rational belief, you will very rapidly see a drastic reduction in the intensity of the negative feelings that you may be experiencing. So let's look at some of the attitudes that can prevent you from letting go of an ended love relationship and explore alternative attitudes or antidotes that will allow you to first let go and then to move on to a new lifestyle and new relationships, something that will soon be in your power to have. You may be telling yourself, I need my partner back in my life or another ideal relationship right now, or even I need a partner in order to feel happy. These attitudes or any variation of them could be behind your feelings of panic, loneliness, depression, desperation, craving, or anxiety. An antidote or positive attitude, however, would be, I prefer, as does practically every other member of the human race, a suitable relationship as opposed to a poor relationship or no relationship at all. But I do not need a relationship in order to be whole. Furthermore, do ideal relationships really exist anyway? As I said earlier, I have never met someone who truly wanted their ex back. However, I've met countless people who've wanted their ex back without the flaws that made their relationship fall apart in the first place. As you can see, that is totally unrealistic. Another negative attitude would result from your telling yourself, taking charge of my life without a partner is too hard, and furthermore, I shouldn't have to put up with these extreme hassles. The result of that attitude is discomfort, anxiety, low frustration tolerance, and a lot of anger. The positive counterpart to this attitude would have you tell yourself and believe, while this is a much more difficult time in my life than other times might have been, I realize that separation and change is generally more stressful than times when my life has had more stability. But to tell myself it's too hard to go on alone implies it's impossible, which it isn't. Thus, it's only difficult, not too hard or impossible. If you're telling yourself it's impossible to go through this period without feeling extremely depressed, angry, lonely, or jealous, since after all, everyone says it's perfectly normal to feel this way, then helplessness, depression, anger, loneliness, and jealousy are likely to be the result. But a more positive attitude would be, while it's statistically normal for me to feel somewhat depressed, angry, lonely, or jealous, it's unhealthy, unhelpful, and not inevitable that I make myself feel so horribly upset. I'd better understand that I'm largely constructing these extreme feelings through my own negative attitudes, and that I can choose not to feel so upset by keeping level-headed and not blowing things out of proportion. If you're telling yourself, after all I did for my ex-partner all of these years, I'm owed a lifetime of happiness, or I deserve better and should always get what I deserve, then you're likely to create self-righteous anger. With a more positive attitude, you could tell yourself, while it's true that I gave a great deal to the relationship and would have preferred it to last a lot longer, I realize now that giving does not guarantee living happily ever after. Another angry attitude would stem from telling yourself, I deserve much better treatment for my acts than I'm getting. At the very least, I deserve fairness and I should get it. A more positive attitude would be, it's unlikely that my former mate will change his or her behavior toward me merely because that's what I want. Changes that a person makes for another person prove to be temporary and often packed with ulterior motives. True change comes because of one's own desire to change, so that by working on my own anger, it's possible that my ex's attitude toward me will change, but certainly is not a given. Therefore, it's in my best interest to give up my demands. Then I can get on with my life much easier. If you're feeling shame, guilt, or depression, it could be because you're telling yourself, I have failed, or worse yet, I am a failure. As an antidote, you could say, perhaps the relationship failed to continue, but that hardly makes me a failure. In fact, and in reality, relationships that end do so merely because they have run their course. And the moment I accept that, I will be free to begin a more appropriate involvement. Of course, you could be feeling hopeless about reinvolvement, as well as some generalized anger at all potential partners. You may then be telling yourself things like, all men or all women are alike, so I'm sure I'll be hurt again. But a positive attitude you can adopt stems from the understanding that any time you generalize to all members of a given sex because of the way one member of that sex behaved, you'll only build a wall that will prevent the kind of involvement that obviously is important to you. Hopefully, you've learned enough not to make the same mistakes you made in the relationship you're ending. So don't blow it now by taking all the other potential partners down in the same shipwreck. Another self-defeating attitude is to tell yourself, there will never be another as good as my ex. I can never replace that person. In which case, you may bring on feelings of depression, grief, and panic. The positive attitude here is to realize the reality that there are many other fish in the sea. I've seen scores of people in the process of divorce who have children and who torment themselves with guilt by saying, I've ruined everyone else's life by leaving. I'm a horrible person for doing so and for having acted so selfishly. A better attitude here is to acknowledge that it will be hard for others who depended on you to stay in your relationship. But if you made the choice to leave, you did so at the time when you were very unhappy and may have been contributing to your partner's unhappiness as well. Even though you may second-guess yourself at certain times, remember what was going on when you made the decision to leave. Demanding no regrets at any time is an awfully tall order to put on yourself, and inventing great things that would have happened if you'd stayed is even worse. Of course, if you second-guess yourself, you could be saying at times, I've made the wrong choice, and now I've really ruined my life. That attitude could also be creating your depression, hopelessness, and jealousy, especially if you're the one who's left the relationship and now find that your ex has become re-involved. A positive attitude here is to acknowledge that you're acting solely on hindsight. At the time you made the decision, you are acting on the facts and desires you had then. Now, it's time to stop your own self-doubting. The moment you do that, you'll be free to get on with your life. Another source of your feelings of panic may be your self-doubt about how you'll survive in the future without the relationship that's ended. But a positive attitude will acknowledge that you, like everyone else, never know what will become of you from moment to moment. If you stop and think about it, life is full of situations when you feel like a fish out of water. You adjusted to them before, and you'll adjust to this breakup too, as long as you don't convince yourself that it's not within your power to do so. And finally, when ending a love relationship, you may be fearing the rejection of others who have even more trouble about your relationship ending than you do. And yes, it's possible that some people will judge you harshly or will be disappointed and perhaps even nasty and downright rejecting. But hopefully, those people you value the most will eventually accept what happened to you as unfortunate, even though the label unfortunate can be from their perspective only. And unfortunate as it may be, it's still a reality, and eventually almost everyone will accept it. Now, a few people may never accept your breakup, and that may be quite disappointing. But since you're powerless to change their thinking, it's best to focus on a very important question, and that is, whose life is it anyway? Remember, the capacity either to love or to enjoy life without a relationship belongs to you, not to the person from whom you were separated. And the responsibility to let go of an ended relationship is yours. It's never the other person's responsibility to free you. Support is often the vehicle that makes a crucial difference in getting you through the process of letting go. While you may find it beneficial to get professional support at a time like this, you may also find it quite natural to turn to your family and friends. For some, that's all that's needed. For others, family and friends can provide a great deal of the support that's needed, but it's not enough. Still others find that family and friends make poor sources of support. Perhaps the people who care about you are even more troubled by your breakup than you are, and so they begin taking sides. Or in some other way, they put their own values into the forefront, when all you've really asked of them is to be there for you. So in seeking support to help you to become emotionally free of your relationship, try to find someone that you can talk to when you're beginning to experience intense feelings such as anger, self-pity, or loneliness, as well as cravings for your ex-partner. You may want to make an arrangement with someone you can call upon if you simply need to talk at those moments. The availability of that type of support when you need it will make your cravings for your ex seem much more bearable, and eventually, you'll experience them less and less. When you are receiving support or giving someone else support, keep in mind that true support puts the goals of the person who's being supported into the forefront. If someone tries to overpower you with their own values while you're in need of support, then they're not really being supportive to you at that moment. Also, don't confuse sympathy with empathy. Sympathy, except perhaps during those acute phases of your shock reaction to the most dire of circumstances, is often counter-supportive. Because when sympathizing with you, people usually validate your right to feel bad or even horrible. That hardly helps. Now, empathy, on the other hand, recognizes what you're feeling, but the emphasis is placed on helping you to move beyond that point. And most importantly, don't abuse your sources of support by maintaining a one-sided relationship based solely on your needs and by refusing to help yourself. Many inadvertently push some of their best friends away. Remember, if you lean too hard, you can overpower whatever it is that you're leaning on. If you've been the initiator of the breakup, it's possible that your ex is quite angry at you. People who've been in some of the most abusive relationships have told me that what went on after the separation made what went on during the relationship pale by comparison. If this is the case, it's important that you distance yourself from your ex and that you prevent whatever harrowing emotional or physical consequences that could occur. This is even more crucial when there are children around who, under the best of circumstances, find your breakup difficult and for whom emotional abuse at this point could be devastating. Therefore, if this bad situation exists and there is any way you can set things up so that you and your ex don't have to see each other, you can prevent an awful lot of trouble. An ex-partner who's intentionally trying to make things difficult for you may only be able to be dealt with by legal means. These include obtaining a restraining order and/or supervised visitation that's court-mandated. If necessary, this can be arranged through your attorney. However, what's possibly even more difficult to handle are the longings that you may experience when you see your ex. Unfortunately, there's no legal solution for this. Many couples who split up with unresolved feelings are able to become friends once they're no longer involved emotionally. However, during a period of emotional firestorm, consider avoidance as the best technique. If you do decide to reconcile, that decision needs to be well thought out. Chances are, many issues that wreaked havoc when you were together will still need to be resolved. In my experience, spontaneous reconciliations based on a spark of passion that's rekindled when you least expect it usually don't last. Breaking up is hard to do, but it's certainly not impossible. Some people are able to get through this emotional process in a matter of weeks, and for others it can take much, much longer. Here are some more perspectives to help you to let go. Remember that simple and easy are not synonymous. As simple as it may seem to break away, expecting that it will be easy is a good route to disappointment. Expect that you'll have doubts and bouts of second-guessing yourself, and that you may even have occasional relapses when you feel as though you just broke up yesterday. If you don't take these relapses too seriously, they won't become major obstacles to letting go. No matter how deeply you felt for your ex-partner, those feelings belong to you. Don't delude yourself into believing that you can't have them again for someone else. If that were the case, who could ever blame you for not letting go? Try doing a post-mortem on your relationship without blaming either your ex or yourself. Understand what worked and what didn't work. What can you learn from this entire experience that can benefit you the next time around? What would you do differently if you had it to do all over again? If you can tap into this self-knowledge or insight, you're in possession of a gold mine of information about yourself. Watch that tendency to paint your relationship either all black or all white. When you can remember both the good times and the bad times, then you're moving toward letting go. If you're thinking in purely negative terms, realize that you're probably making quite an overgeneralization error in your thinking. After all, if the individual from whom you are separating were that totally negative, you'd be unambivalently glad to have that person out of your life. There would be hardly any conflict at all. Your anger at your ex is often associated with the parts of the relationship that you're unwilling to acknowledge. That is, the reality that the good times you had are no longer here. By the same token, if you're remembering the relationship only in positive terms, think about those very things that led to the end of the relationship. It may also be helpful to focus on your routine life with your ex-partner rather than mainly on those unforgettable moments or events that you cherish the most. If it's holiday time, don't think about the best or the worst holiday together, but think about all the holidays that you spent together. In other words, don't make more of the relationship than it was, and don't make less of it than it was. Look at your ended relationship realistically as it really was. People close to you, can often help you to fill in some missing pieces. And remember, the greatest healer of all is the truth. Sometimes, your ended love relationship could have been very short-term in nature, but the pain experienced in parting is as great as if you were together 30 years rather than perhaps 30 days or even less. If you're reeling from a short-term relationship like that, ask yourself if the wound you feel because of the loss is really a heart wound, or is it just an ego wound that you're building way out of proportion? Ego wounds can feel like real losses, just like infatuation can feel like real love. But like infatuation, it's merely an illusion, and by realizing what it really is, your pain will probably dissipate much faster. So if your ended relationship was one that was short-term, remember, not everything works out. On the other hand, if it was a long-term relationship, try to focus on what you had together as an invaluable life experience. And remember, someone who has broken up with you, who does not really care about you, in reality has done you a favor in the long run. For you're now free to pursue the rest of your life in a direction that will work for you. If the ending of your relationship makes you feel like a victim, see whether this characterizes other areas of your life as well. For example, if your relationship hadn't ended, might you be likely to be saying when you're 80 years old, "I gave up what could have been a much more fulfilling life just to stay in my marriage"? Now, forgiving your ex is to your advantage. A lot has been romanticized about the concept of forgiveness. In addition, practically all religions deal with the act of forgiving as a positive virtue. But what isn't stressed enough is the fact that once you've truly forgiven, you relieve yourself of a great deal of anger, anxiety, frustration, and tension. This means that you've taken another major step toward freeing yourself so that you can move on emotionally. Forgiving does not mean condoning or admitting that you were wrong. Forgiving simply means letting go of the negative emotions that you experienced toward a person and adopting a more or less live-and-let-live attitude of acceptance. Until this is done, on some level, your healing process will not be complete. If you're having feelings of inadequacy, try some new things. Take some risks. You may need to learn some skills that you depended on your ex for. All of these things may be possible now with that gift of time which goes with your newfound freedom. It can be an exhilarating feeling to take a risk and to see things turn out well. But even when they don't, your risk-taking teaches you that you're not as fragile as you may have thought you were. Learn to enjoy your own solitude and aloneness as an alternative to the unenjoyable loneliness that you may initially feel. Remember, your own solitude can be profoundly nourishing, and it's one thing that no one can ever take away from you. People who heal the quickest are those who never, even for a moment, lose hope that their lives will continue to get better. You'll help your growth process immensely by understanding that the responsibility for making your life better lies firmly with yourself. There are two common errors that you can make when it comes to entering a new relationship after a breakup. One is to close yourself off to all members of the opposite sex by telling yourself that after all you've been through, you're not going to get hurt again, or convincing yourself that there's no such thing as a good partner. This attitude is common with those who have not dealt with their anger and who continue to blame their ex-partner for what may have been a painful relationship and/or a painful breakup. If you fear your own vulnerability so much that you'll avoid new relationships altogether, remember, the worst has already happened to you and you did live through it. Many even cling to negative emotions as a protection against getting hurt again. How self-defeating. If you tell yourself you could never go through that experience again, you may close the door to a relationship that may turn out to be one that's most fulfilling. Hopefully you've learned something and you'll now proceed with a bit more caution. But demanding a guarantee that should you become involved again that you won't be hurt is only a guarantee that you'll stay uninvolved. The second type of error is getting involved prematurely with the first, second, or third person you meet a very short time after you've split. In this case, it could be your fear of never getting involved again, or fear of just plain going it alone that throws you into a rebound relationship. Rebound relationships rarely work because they provide little more than just anesthesia for the pain that you may be experiencing. In addition, rebound relationships are sometimes merely a means of revenge against your former partner. So make that next relationship a true choice by waiting until you've done all the healing you need to do. For most people, that takes about a year. As one very happily remated person told me recently, I knew I was ready about 5 minutes after I felt the joy of being free. I knew then that for someone to take me out of this new lifestyle, they would have to be quite special. If you only let your heart decide the last time, this time, try letting your head in on the decision as well. It's also unrealistic to expect that you'll never have an occasional relapse of sadness, anger, or regret. They can take any form. If you dispute them or in some way distract yourself, they'll probably pass quite quickly. Some people are fine until they hear that their ex is remarried, maybe years later, and then they begin the whole process of second-guessing themselves again. Know that these feelings are normal and their impact will be minimal. Most of all, letting go and overcoming the pain that follows after your relationship has run its course involves your own ability to give yourself permission to pick up the pieces and to go in any of life's infinite directions. That permission is perhaps the greatest gift you can ever give to yourself. What follows now are some exercises designed to help you in any of the areas that we have discussed which apply to you. Do them as often as you require, and you will see differences in your outlook very soon. Make a list of all the issues that are bothering you regarding the breakup of your relationship. It could be a short list, or it could be a very long list. Include literally everything as it pertains to you, your ex, and to other people who may have been affected, such as children or other family members. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. After your list is complete, go through and separate the items on your list into two categories. One category will be called practical issues, and the other will be called emotional issues. You may just want to put a P for practical and an E for emotional next to each item that you've listed. If something is both practical and emotional, or could be either, recognize it as being both and put a P and an E next to it. Throughout these exercises, turn the tape off and then back on whenever you need to concentrate and as you see fit. Next, I'd like you to think not in terms of solving the issues or problems that you've identified, but think in terms of what your life would be like if these issues were resolved. For example, if an issue or problem you've identified is financial, what would your situation be if that financial problem were no longer an issue? If you've identified intense rage toward your partner, what would your life be like if the goal of eliminating that rage were met? If depression is something you've identified, what would the situation be if that depression could be erased? If you still harbor fantasies about getting back together, what would your life be like if these fantasies were gone? Go through each item on your list, see past the issue, and come up with a goal that you would be satisfied with. Now that you've matched a goal with each issue you've identified, see if you can come up with what would be the shortest possible distance between these two points, the issue and the goal. What would the most feasible route to a solution be? If you're feeling stuck, try some of these things. Try looking at the issue as though you were advising your best friend. What would you advise him or her to do in this situation? You've identified an issue. You've identified a goal. What's the best connection between these two items? You may want to discuss this with a friend or a professional of some type who can perhaps help you to think this through. This amounts to a plan that's designed to help you to reach your goal in the best possible way in the shortest possible time. Deal with only one issue at a time. For this exercise, treat each issue as though it were your only issue, and let your creativity prevail. Close your eyes and again pretend you are objectively advising your best friend or someone else you really care about. Or imagine that the three wisest people you know or know of having a conference trying to determine what would be the best plan to solve your problem. You may find it helpful to brainstorm on a scrap of paper and then to refine your plan after you've considered all possible ideas. Think in terms of what support you need to carry out your plan, whether it be people to talk to or people to give you whatever help you need to get to that place that you've identified as being where you want to go. Make a list of the resources available to you. Friends, lawyers, financial advisors, support groups, singles groups, these can all be found if you seek them out. Visit your bookstore or library. There are practically always a generous supply of books available that deal with the subject of ending love relationships. Do some reading in that area. Talk to some people who have gone through it recently and see if you can get them to share some of the secrets that help them the most. You may also want to consult some of the other tapes in the series, such as Single Parenting, Dealing with Loneliness and Isolation, Enjoying Your Life as a Single, Meeting a New Love Relationship, Holiday Stress, or Effective Goal Setting, etc. If you call us, we'll be happy to send you a complete list. If you find yourself blaming your ex, make a list of all the things that you blame him or her for. Let yourself get into it to the point where you actually see the exaggeration and the humor in all the blame you're doing. If you find yourself becoming obsessed with thoughts about your ex, set aside a certain amount of time each day to think about him or her with whatever issues your thoughts bring up. Make this period of time the same time every day if possible, and limit it to 15 minutes or a half hour at the most. Some people find it helpful when thoughts come up at other times to simply make notes of them and then table them until the time comes that you have set aside. When the thought of your ex comes into being at times other than your designated time to think about him or her, stop the thought by inducing some sort of physical activity. Try substituting your thought with something pleasant. Write the alternative attitudes and antidotes you've identified that are tailor-made to your situation on 3x5 cards and keep the cards in a place where they can be drawn out and referred to at will. Affirmations such as, I can live without him, or all things considered, I'm much better off now than I was a year ago, or whatever you have substituted for the irrational or self-defeating thoughts that you've identified earlier, can help you tremendously at those moments when you can use them the most. Keep track of the number of times the thoughts about your ex occur. Treat them literally as attacks of unwanted thoughts. You may even want to chart them on some kind of graph so that you can see a comparison. Chances are that by following this procedure, you'll start to see a decrease, and give yourself credit whenever you're able to recognize that. But remember, the thoughts probably will not stop altogether. There may be occasional references to that person and to that pain indefinitely, but if you don't dwell on those thoughts or put yourself down for having them, they'll ultimately pass and have very, very little effect. Some people find it very helpful to wear a rubber band around their wrist and to snap the rubber band, giving them a slight amount of harmless pain when they begin to have unwanted thoughts. This is an easy way of deconditioning them. If you start to have thoughts or fantasies about getting back together or other ideas that you know are unworkable, most importantly, don't take them seriously. Consider them almost like clouds in an otherwise blue sky, except that they're there, but that they don't require or deserve any more energy than just recognizing that you're human enough to have them. Instead of thinking about the past, work some more on your blueprint for the future. Remember The past is something that you have no control over at this point. The future, on the other hand, is something upon which you could have almost unlimited control. Finally, I'd like you to try this imagery exercise that can help you to put the relationship that you're ending into perspective. If you're driving in a car, turn off the tape and continue this exercise at a time when you can give it your full attention. You can take as much or as little time as you would like for this. Sit down in a comfortable chair, close your eyes, and think about the last time you felt completely relaxed. Then just give yourself a moment to relive that thought. You may want to turn the tape off now and turn it back on when you're feeling sufficiently relaxed. Now think back to the day you met the person from whom you are now separated. What was going on that day? What was your frame of mind? How were you feeling? At your own pace, let your ex-partner enter into the scene and relive the first time you met. What was going on? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? What did you see when you looked at this brand new person in your life who would later mean so much to you? Allow yourself to relive the moment that you first connected. Your first date, your first kiss, perhaps the first time that you had sex. Imagine those key moments, like the one where you decided to have a relationship, to make a commitment, to marry, or to live together. And at your own pace, relive the relationship up to the point when things started to change. You may want to turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you've reached the point where the relationship began to change. Now at this point, the relationship is beginning to feel much differently. Be aware of what's going on. Who's in the picture? What are the circumstances? How much time has gone by? What are you feeling? What's happening as the relationship is progressing in a downward direction? Could have been a process that took many, many years, or it could have been a process that only took one day. Be aware of how this played itself out. At some point, the relationship ended. You may want to turn the tape off now and allow your image to go to that moment, and then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Now allow yourself to be in the present moment. But we're not going to stop here. What I'd now like you to do is to let yourself go ahead 5 years. It's now 5 years from today. The issues that you've identified have been resolved. Emotionally and practically, you're over this relationship. You're feeling healed. What's going on right now? What's happening in your life? What are some things that you never thought you could see happening 5 years ago? Stay in that moment and get about as much information as you possibly can. You may want to take a piece of paper and write down just what's going on in your life. Who are the people? What are the circumstances? And be aware of what you're feeling right now. You've made it through a period that perhaps you didn't think you could survive. You have survived. You're a lot tougher than you think you are. You may want to turn the tape off and take as many notes about the situation as you can, and then when you're ready, turn the tape back on. Now, as the you of 5 years from now, I'd like you to write a letter to the you of today. The subject of this letter is just how you got to the point that you've identified as being 5 years from now. How did you get there? What were the struggles? What got you through? What made it possible for you to get to this point that you very well may have thought you would never see? Your life is together. Are you in a relationship? How did you heal? What were the secrets? Turn off the tape and take as much time as you need to complete this. What you've done is allowed yourself to access that part of you that is available to you at any time. This is the part of you that wants to heal, the part of you that wants to move ahead. You can go back and do this exercise as often as you'd like, and remember, the wisdom that comes out of it is all yours. It's something that no one can ever take away from you. Ending and letting go of your love relationship is a process that you have much more control over than you may ever have thought was possible. Whenever you're feeling stuck, you may want to re-listen to this program or re-listen to certain parts of it so that you can work through whatever is standing in your way of that healing that you now know is possible. You're well ahead on your process. Feel free to let us know how you're doing and how we can be of further help to you. I'm Dr. Michael Broder, saying good luck.